welcome to Como Explained. It's the podcast from the KBIA newsroom that takes some of the thorny issues and politics that affect our community and breaks them down. I'm Scott Pham, the digital content director here at KBIA. My co-host is Ryan Femuliner, assistant director of the newsroom. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Scott. My brain is just, I'm cramming right now because we're trying to get all these shows in before you and I just take part ways for the summer.
It's a Como marathon right now. Hopefully you experience it as the regular Como Explain schedule, but we're pumping out a lot of them right now, trying to schedule them ahead of time so that you get uninterrupted Como Explained access and we get to go on vacation.
Yes. But yeah, so how about you? How are you feeling, Scott?
I'm doing okay. Like you said, a busy day. This is the last week before I go.
Yeah. And where are you going?
Oh my gosh, you make me talk about it.
I'm going to make you talk about it. You sound really important when you talk about this.
I'm going to France and I'm going to China. Up to France to talk at a conference and China to lecture about radio.
Yeah. So the real place is not like going to Paris, Missouri or Mexico, Missouri. You're going to the real countries. You're flying literally around the world. So
yeah, I'm flying around the world to countries that are named what they're supposed to be named. Yeah. But yeah, that'll be about 2.5 weeks. I'll be back here explaining Colombia as I was meant to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Safe travels. So for today, we're going to dive into what's been I wanted somebody to explain it to me for a long time as well. That's the Providence Road improvements.
Yeah, this is an issue that's been a problem for a long time. It's an intersection that is probably, I think, is the busiest in Colombia. And I was planning for the show, and I was thinking to myself, it's so hard just to like get started, just to figure out like what the root of the problem was and where things started happening. I was thinking, man, I wish somebody had an explainer.
Yeah, I wish I already had an explainer so I could do my explainer.
Yeah.
No, the intersection you're talking about is the intersection of Providence and Stadium, right by campus, right there by Faro Field. If you live in Columbia, you've driven through it. You drive through it on a regular basis.
It is almost the extreme southwest corner of campus.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it wouldn't actually address. It's not like they're talking about making some major changes to that intersection per se. It's the area north of that intersection toward campus.
Yeah. So for the past 7 to 10 years, really, the city has been talking about how to improve this area, and they recently made a decision, and that's why we're doing this show. So let's set the scene here.
Okay. Right. So this area, again, you hopefully are already familiar with it, but let's just break it down what it is. So so north of Stadium on Providence. To the right, you have campus, as we said. You've got some Greek fraternity sorority homes. You've got some dorms there as well now, mm-hmm. Some other campus buildings on the right side. And then on the left side, if we're looking at a map, which actually we have a map on our website. It might be good for you to take a quick glance at this so you know what we're talking about.
If you're at your computer, either look at that map or maybe Google Grasslands Neighborhood in Columbia, Missouri is kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah. And so on the other side is what we have is Grasslands Neighborhood. And that's the other name you've heard when we talk about the Providence Road Improvement, Grasslands, because that's the neighborhood that seems to be part of the problem here or the thing that needs to be addressed with the project, right?
Yeah.
So on the again, if you're driving north on Providence, to your left, we've got this Grasslands Neighborhood. So what's the Grasslands Neighborhood?
The Grasslands Neighborhood is a subdivision that's very old. It was made in 1925. It's a weird area because the Grasslands Neighborhood is very nice. The houses there are on the expensive side. It's a very nice neighborhood. A lot of cul-de-sacs, winding streets. Definitely in a older population there. And then just immediately east of Providence Road, it's all very institutional. So it's kind of like the meeting of these two worlds,
right,
along Providence
Road.
You
know, me and my wife like had this dream of being like college professors 20 years from now and with like, you know, the tweed jacket and the patches and everything and living in one of these homes right there and just walking out your front door and walking to. We've talked about that before. I don't know if that's really going to happen. There are many different dreams through the course of my life.
You look right in tweed.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'd be pretty cool. But that's the type. It does kind of look like that. There's these old style homes, Tudor revivals, some of the stuff. That kind of era, again, the first homes built in 1925, some more recent. Rollins, the guy that everything's named after Rollins, former president of the university. His home was in this neighborhood. There's a lot of really nice homes. So it's right there on the left, I guess, the west side of Providence.
Yeah. So um, So you probably know this, but Providence is a four-lane north-south road. It's the only road that really goes completely north and completely south through town. So it's a very important arterial road in Columbia. Stadium, east-west street, it kind of snakes around a lot. Stadium itself is not really the problem. Stadium is wide and it's fast, and it traffic flows there pretty well. The problem that we're looking at is that on Providence Road, you have a lot of university traffic along rush hour. You have a lot of traffic going south of town where there's shopping, suburbs, and that kind of thing. And you have these people trying to get onto and off of Providence Road that live in the Grasslands neighborhood. So basically, whenever it's rush hour, somebody is trying to get out of the neighborhood, taking a left turn on Providence going north. It's going to take them forever to get in.
Right.
And then there's a third problem, which is that you have all this housing, all this kind of dense fraternity and institutional housing east of Providence Road, creating a lot of pedestrian traffic. So you have pedestrians walking along the street. And I don't know if you've ever driven there in the middle of the day or gone down there to get lunch or something. You'll see people trying to cross Providence Road, which can get very fast at parts, just north of Rollins. It's very frightening because they'll kind of like run across two lanes and then they'll kind of stop in the median.
Mm-hmm.
And the median's not very big, so you got this traffic going around them and then they got to run back.
Yeah, there's no actual like crosswalk, no light for you to cross because it's not intended to have pedestrians walking through there, especially, you know, they're not always walking at the actual intersections either. But I think it's discouraged in those areas. It's not meant to be a pedestrian area, but people still use it that way for a number of reasons. And the other difference between Providence and Stadium that you're talking about, like you said, Stadium really is a lot faster. There was all this room to build on that thoroughfare on each way. But this area we're talking about, if you've driven, you may not have even thought about it when you're driving through it, but there is housing and stuff built almost to the road. There's not all this area to spread out. And that's really where the problem with this project and the things that have kind of caused it to be some controversy and stuff that we'll get into later really comes from, this old stock housing and stuff that was put in very close proximity when you didn't have any need for this type of thoroughfare in this area.
Right. So it may have gone back further, but as far back as 2005 is what my research showed. In 2005, there began to be serious talks in the city about trying to alleviate the traffic problem. Now, like you said, widening the road is next to impossible, so they're trying to find some creative solutions. At that time in 2005, according to Scott Bitterman, an engineering supervisor for the Public Works Department, he told the Tribune that the plan back in 2005 was to actually cut through the lawn of a big fraternity building, Phi Kappa Psi, which is kind of in between Rollins and Burnham Road. And then that would kind of create a way to get from – I don't really know what the concept was there – to get from Rollins on the east, travel west across Providence and down into the Grasslands neighborhood. Anyway, that obviously – the fraternity wasn't going to be happy about that. I don't think it ever got far enough for them to say, no, don't do that, because that idea got dumped pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it was just an idea, and we really didn't go very far as getting things approved, going to public hearings, that kind of stuff. It just never really materialized. But it's something that is an obvious issue. I mean, they had some numbers, Public Works had some numbers from 2008 to 2012, which is after the timeline you're talking about, but there were just under 199 collisions along Providence between Stadium and Stewart Road, which Stewart Road is just a little further north of the area we're talking about. That's not a very long stretch of road to have 200 collisions over there. So it's very traffic.
Yeah, we're
but
talking
also,
like six blocks.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. But also so there's a lot of traffic there, but that's a pretty high – I don't have the numbers in front of me of every other intersection in the area, but that's a pretty big amount of collisions to be happening in that area.
Yeah, we got we got just over 81,000 vehicles going through that intersection daily, making it easily the busiest intersection in Columbia.
Right. And so, like you said, it's something that everyone's looking at and saying, we've got collisions here. It's a really busy. There's got to be a way to make this bigger, better, faster, or make things go more smoothly. Right. And so, 2005, and probably before then, but 2005, it definitely was on the record as something that people were looking at. And then things really kind of picked up steam once you got closer to 2008 and 2010. We actually started having some public meetings and discussions on what to do here with this area.
But those meetings, we'll talk about them in a moment, were mostly with the stakeholders in the neighborhood. So for the public, I feel like they might have heard about this in the mid-2000s, and then it didn't really seem to pick up again until just last year, in 2012, when the city kind of all of a sudden passed the two-part plan. And this was immediately controversial. The plan was had It was called Phase 1 and Phase 2. And they introduced and passed Phase 1 in the same meeting, which was surprising to a lot of people. And that plan basically was they were saying, we got to find a way to get traffic going north and south in Providence away from that Stadium Boulevard intersection and quickly into the Grasslands neighborhood. So they wanted to create what they call a residential feeder, which is kind of a small street that connects to the main Providence Road, but is the kind of street you would only take if you lived in that neighborhood. So that kind of separates out the neighborhood traffic from the Providence Road traffic. The problem is you create a street in a neighborhood as dense as this, and you got to take some homes out.
Right.
So the plan was to actually demolish two homes in between Burnham Road and Bingham Road on Providence. Immediately controversial.
Yeah, absolutely. It was something that was thrown out there at this 2012 meeting, and the city council had signed on, because, again, there were some of these conversations that had happened before. I don't want to say completely behind the scenes, because there were some interested parties that were involved, but not necessarily really out there as an ongoing discussion. It was, and a lot of things like this do happen in the city, that where, you know, projects will you'll make sure that it's even going to be feasible before you bring it to council. But not often do we have this, you know, we're going to have to take these houses through eminent domain at a very visible and important district and area in town. And so, taking out these two homes, as you said, very controversial at the time. Really one of the things we didn't really talk about, but, you know, you talked about the pedestrian traffic that's a problem. It's really just that making a left turn into Grasslands or into campus really seems to be what they're trying to avoid, is a left turn that does not have a stoplight, because that's where you get into really dangerous territory and also things that will slow down traffic to a halt in some points if somebody's trying to make a left turn onto one of these roads. Because you've got 1, 2, 3 roads right now into the Grasslands neighborhood with none of them having stoplights. So
right.
Any of those that you want to take, if you're trying to make a left, if you're going north on Providence and trying to make a left into your neighborhood, you don't have a stoplight to do so. And that area does have kind of a hill and a turn to it, so you also don't have great visibility if you're trying to make that turn. So that's one of the main things they're trying to address with this plan. And that feeder road will address that problem, right? It will allow you to make a right turn instead of a left turn in and out of the neighborhood, and hopefully, you know, prevent some of that hold up and also dangerous driving there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And also hopefully provide a single easy route into the neighborhood instead of people kind of making these left turns along three different points in what's really a pretty small area.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that was pretty immediately controversial. As we said, the Historical Preservation Commission got real annoyed pretty quick. They said, hey, we didn't know anything about this. You're talking about demolishing really old buildings. That's kind of what we do. And The Historical Preservation Commission, what is that, Ryan? That's one of those things I had to look up.
So, yeah, the Historical Preservation Commission. So it's really interesting. This kind of came out in the Niedermeyer. I learned more about it in the Niedermeyer, I should say, thing we talked about earlier in our C2 show. But the Historic Preservation Commission is really kind of a city entity at the moment. It's not like you might think in your mind that it's this like committee that's got grant funding or something and also has the power to say you can't do anything to this property because it's historic. That's really not the case in Columbia, actually. The Historic Preservation Commission has very little, like almost no teeth. They can weigh in. They actually have, in a demolition situation, for example, there's a 10-day period where the Historic Preservation Commission gets to look at this, and that's the step, is there's this 10-day period. But they can't actually say, no, you can't do it, or they can't create extra time for you not to make a demolition. The only thing they can actually do is say, we don't need our 10 days. So the only thing they can do is give you is make the process easier for you. They can't actually make it harder for you based on the historic aspects of this. But this 10-day period and the demolitions I'm talking about here is meant to give kind of a grace period for them to actually try to go to the owners, which they did in the Niedermeyer building, and say, let's try to find something else to save this building. We think it's historic, and to basically cause a ruckus as well if they need to, in which case, and they will do that if they can. But there again, there's really no actual, ordinance-based teeth to what they can do as a commission.
Though they do have the responsibility in law to review every construction that involves destruction.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So so they did that with this, and they found, as they believed, that some of these buildings were historically important, that these were some of the first buildings in the neighborhood built in 1925. And they also believed that they might have been designed by some important architects.
Yeah, I think the planner may have been the same person that planned the plaza in Kansas City, which is a very well-known walking mall there. So, and just somebody else who built a lot of homes in town. They're pretty recognizable homes. Some of them have a lot of character, that kind of thing.
Right. So they said, hold up, we're going to think of some alternatives. They had some meetings. They did some research. And they said, so how about instead of cutting these homes down, we cut into the lawns, essentially widening the street. Not a great plan, in my opinion. It didn't really seem to be doing much toward alleviating traffic. It just kind of made it easier to drive in that area. Though, I mean, you respect them wanting to not tear those homes down, but it wasn't really a solution on equal merit.
Right. Well, the other thing we didn't really talk about yet, we talked about phase one. You want to talk about phase two?
Right. No. So phase two was the second kind of more destructive part of the plan that would extend that feeder road down to another six homes along Providence Road, totaling eight homes being eminent domained and destroyed between East Brandon Road on the south and Burnham Road on the north.
Right.
So total cost would be more than $6 million.
For this whole project, yeah. So, and I don't think that even necessarily – you don't know what you're going to have to pay on eminent domain and all that kind of stuff as well. So
yeah, and these prices are just rising because of the how close they are to campus. And as we've talked about before, the increasing demand for student housing that is non-institutional.
They also – Historic Preservation also had some other – They did a little more work than they needed to do in this review that they gave as well. They went and actually FOIA'd and looked at some old email exchanges and tried to figure out how this process went. Maybe we'll jump into that here in a minute before we get through the timeline of what really happened. But
it is a really incredible document, though. I want to put it on the website. It's kind of crazy. It's something like 200 pages long, and it sounds like it's going to be the most boring thing in the world. You think it's just going to be about how great these homes are, right? There's one page, intro. Page two, it talks about how great these homes are. Page three is the beginning of a 150-page diatribe about how they were left out of the process and how angry they were about it, and they have proof that they were left out of the process.
Right.
So it's actually kind of fascinating. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. So let's talk about what actually happened from there. So they were not the only entity or group or person that was upset about this. There was a lot of conversation, and that's where you probably heard these names getting thrown around and went, what the heck is this story? Why did this get to be such a big deal all of a sudden? But basically, the city council hears people screaming and all of a sudden decides to take a step back and look at this again. Phase two, we should mention, wasn't going to happen for another 5 or 10 years. It was going to be a while before the demolition of the other six homes was going to. But phase one was coming in the next year or two, was something that actually was going to happen pretty soon. And many people felt they didn't know anything about, was kind of a surprise and something they weren't happy about. In the beginning, January 31st of this year, the Preservation Commission showed those alternatives they were talking about, some of the other plans that they wanted to throw out there and say, why don't we try to figure something else out? We're not to tear these homes down.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then in February, I believe it was. Yeah. And in February, Public Works said, you're right, we should maybe think about some other alternatives other than phase one. So they brought in Laura Nauser, who is the ward councilwoman for that area, got her support. And they had a plan that was kind of like the plan that the Preservation Commission had, except it basically – they were relying on this other street called Birch Street, which is a little bit west of Providence Road. And they would kind of spruce that up and call that a feeder street. And that would be hopefully the main way to get into the neighborhood.
It's actually about two Columbia City blocks west of Providence Road. So it's actually pretty far away from this area that basically think that traffic could be diverted into there as an access point into Grasslands, whereas this feeder road we're talking about that would have involved the demolition of all these homes would have been one row of homes over to the west. So it would have been visible basically from Providence. This other one, you almost have to know, you have to live in the neighborhood to know that this is the new access road. This is the new way to get in to your neighborhood. So this whole time, the city council is trying to figure out what to do, right? Actually, back in November, they went ahead and voted to, because phase one had been approved the previous year. In November, they voted to go ahead and say, okay, let's rescind that approval and give this a little bit more time.
Yeah, it's kind of in limbo. So it's in pause.
Yeah, it's in limbo. And then in February, the council says, all right, we're going to give it 2 more months because they were supposed to look at it in February. Okay, let's give it a couple more months. Let's take some time, figure out what everybody's upset about and how we can do this. And so then in March, Public Works gets involved more directly, I guess.
Right. So they have this meeting. A whole bunch of people come. And at that meeting, they bring all of the ideas together, the ideas that Public Works had, the ideas that they've gotten from Historical Preservation Commission and that kind of thing. And they kind of lay it all out in 10 options because they're trying to make this as confusing as possible.
Basically.
For everybody.
Well, and a lot of the options are really similar to each other, right? There's some minor differences between one or the other, but some of them are really drastically different. Option 9 is the one that we're talking about. We're calling phase one, but actually became option 9 here in the discussion of the 10 different options.
Right. So the city took phase one. They washed it, cleaned it, rebranded it as option 9 and brought it back to the table. Same exact plan, except that it didn't have this second phase connected to it. I think that's kind of like looming in the future somehow, but they don't say that.
They're
going
to have to approve that separately
if
that's something the city wants to pursue once they've got this thing out of the way.
Right.
So you've got all these plans. Option 10 is the one that people call do nothing, basically, and half joking, but it was basically just putting in a right lane turn going onto Stadium from Providence, heading south, just kind of extending it into the guy's yard there. And so that was only a $250,000 project, something very minor that's not even really the necessarily thing that's being highlighted at the moment is what's a problem is that right turn there.
Yeah, we're not going to go through all of these options here, but some of them are worth pointing out, Ryan. Option 3 is that old 2005 one that I think maybe a lot of people thought was off the table. That's the one where they're going to extend Rollins through the front yard of Phi Kappa Psi into Burnham, which is the northernmost boundary of the Grasslands neighborhood. Really weird option. I'm still not totally sure what it accomplishes.
Yeah, so maybe it's just here's the option for people who don't want to take from Grasslands and want to take from campus instead. There was also a really funny option. Option 4 is taking this from a completely different idea, extending Garth Road, which, again, you'll have to look at the map for this to make sense. It's barely even on the map.
It's a totally different neighborhood.
Different neighborhood. And you would have – they'd be building a completely new road that would go over the Katy Trail, which if you made this theoretical road now, it would go all the way over and connect to Clarkson Road, which would be this strange feeder. So basically, if you were going to take that, it would be if you're coming from, you know, West Broadway, you would turn onto Garth and then take that all the way south, and all of a sudden you'd be in the Grasslands neighborhood. You can't do that now because there's no road there over the Katy Trail.
And it's the trail. You're not supposed to have a road over
it. You're not supposed to. And if you've been over there, that's like a really, really wooded area. That would not be a small undertaking. That would be a pretty big project.
It's a lot of street to build, too. They're talking about building a lot of street and putting a bridge down.
Yeah.
I guess the reason why they brought it up was they were like, well, we don't have to tear down any homes. So.
Right, yeah. You just got to ruin nature. But other than that, it's cool. That one, they had a price tag of $2.2 million on that. But that doesn't seem like that could be right, to be honest.
No.
It seems like it'd have to be a lot more than that.
Yeah, but most of these plans were cheaper than option 9 because of tearing down the homes is so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them came down to underneath $3 million in price tag.
Right.
Yeah.
But then the option that we ended up getting to, the option that everybody seems to be on board with at the moment is option 8, actually more specifically option 8A. And so it started as option 8, but there were a few changes that went into it. So the whole problem is that there's too much traffic and it gets stopped there because there's a stoplight at Rollins. Instead of having one stoplight, now there's going to be 2 stoplights. So that's the funny thing to me with all of this is that if the problem is traffic flow, adding another stoplight, if you have the luck that I do when you're driving on the street and come to a stoplight, that seems like it might impede traffic a little bit more. But I'm not an engineer, so what do I know?
Yeah.
But regardless, basically the main thing it's going to do, the most noticeable thing it will do for most people is put in 2 new stoplights and take out that old stoplight at Rollins. So it'll put a stoplight in at Burnham Road, which is the one, if you're heading north before you get to Rollins, which could be an access point to the Grasslands neighborhood. Currently, if you want to turn into the Grasslands neighborhood, there is no stoplight. That's part of what they're saying. If they're making those left turns, it's really dangerous because there's no stoplight. You're just taking the risk to get in there. So we're getting rid of that stoplight, or putting a stoplight in there, getting rid of the one at Rollins, and then putting a stoplight at the next road north, Turner Avenue, which would be an access point to campus, actually. There's really not much to access the other way. A few apartments, but the main thing that the other way, main purpose for that stoplight is going to be to get onto campus.
Yeah.
And so two stoplights instead of one, some other minor improvements. They're going to hold on to that idea of widening the right turn lane onto Stadium by taking over a little bit of that guy's front yard, but he's got plenty of land, so it looks like it's going to be okay. And a few other impediments so you're not allowed to make left turns out of some of these roads to try to avoid that issue on there. But those are the main improvements, the main things that are going to be noticeable.
Yeah. So there's no destruction of homes. There's no creation of new streets. That's the most important thing to know about this.
Yeah, no creation of new streets. And also that Birch Road feeder we talked about, that was on the option 8 originally, but for whatever reason they decided to throw that out and not make improvements. The road already exists.
Yeah.
But they decided not to make improvements to that road. But that's the one that if you took a left onto Burnham with that new stoplight, if you took a left onto Burnham, Birch is the road you'd have to turn onto to get into this neighborhood. Okay. So that's where that, even though it's strange because it's two blocks away, that's why that one makes sense to be the feeder road, the new access road, is because now you've got a nice, safer, and hopefully more traffic friendly way to get into that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. So, what do you think, Ryan? Is it a good solution?
Again, I'm not a city engineer, but, you know, you've still got these two other roads there that don't have stoplights to get into. And if I live, this is the Burnham Road is like the north edge of the Grasslands neighborhood. So if I'm living on one of those other two streets, I might just still take my chances and go out that other access road instead of driving around. And that's still going to create traffic problems and not really address the problem you need. They did have on this plan, that's the only other thing that changed from option 8 to 8A, is they did have impediments there on those two roads I'm talking about where you couldn't make anything but a right turn in or out. You couldn't make those left turns. They had those, you know, physical impediments that were going to be right there, so you couldn't.
And this is the whole thing. The fewer left turns that you make onto or off of Providence Road, the faster traffic moves.
Faster traffic goes, less dangerous it is. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, they decided to take those impediments out of this and when they made it to option 8A. And so there's still, to me, there's still the problem. It seems like if you're someone from this neighborhood, I guess that's the idea, is if you're from this neighborhood, you know about this problem already. That's the other thing, is a lot of people don't really know about this problem if you're not from Grasslands. But if you live there, I think you probably already know how dangerous it is to get in and out of there. And so maybe you do start taking this route, even though it takes you an extra minute or two. It might be worth the trouble. But does it exist? Does this address a larger problem? I don't really think so, but I don't know how you solve that because, as we've talked about, Scott, I don't know how you expand beyond where the road is now. If the problem is we need another lane or something like that, I don't know where that –
We need another lane or another street. We need something more. It seems that you can kind of adjust the flow of traffic by putting in lights or restricting the kinds of turns you can make, but you don't really alleviate it until there's more road to drive on.
Right, and I think the hope is that by – taking away these things that slow down traffic, then traffic is able to flow in these places where you need it to. It's one of those things where we don't know yet, right, whether or not you'll still have the problems that you do now. But again, two stoplights instead of one doesn't seem to help that a whole lot if the problem is stop traffic heading north or south on Providence, which I think is one of the things that they're trying to address here, is that if you've driven on this on Providence in this area, around a rush hour, around one of these school hours, you'll know that, or lunch hour, you'll know that it does get backed up pretty far and can be kind of a pain. And so I don't know that this really does alleviate that traffic flow problem. It does give Grasslands a safer option. But we had a lot of hubbaloo to get to that point, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So, Ryan, let's talk about the controversies real quick, because this is kind of the reason why you might have heard about this. You might be thinking, why am I hearing so much about roads? You know, stuff happens in roads all the time. Why are we hearing about it?
These projects are not that uncommon, right? The city has to approve these kind of things all the time. This project in the end is going to be $2.1 million is what they're estimating. That's not – I mean, that's a big project, but that's not
it's
like –
it's cheaper than –
we're talking more about this $2.1 million project than we do most $2.1 million
yeah,
projects.
You know, I want to answer the question, like, is this a lot of money? Is this a lot of money we've been spending? And I actually – I looked at the capital improvement projects that we already have on the books, the kinds that we're actually planning, the kind of road improvements we're planning to do in the next few years. So if you look at the kinds of things that get done in the next year or two, we're looking at in the 5th Ward, actually, there's a Scott Boulevard project coming up. That's $1.7 million, roughly, for a 1 to 2 year project. Phase 1 / option 9, that would have been a 1 to 2 year project. So $3 million for that, probably pretty expensive,
mm-hmm.
right? But for the total project, which would have been just under $7 million, probably would have taken years. The better comparison for that are the kinds of projects that we already have in the books that are planned to take 6 to 10 years. And those are huge. We have multiple projects that are more than $10 million apiece. We have an I-70 project that's going to cost $14 million coming up. We got a NIFOM project that's going to cost $18.5 million. So in terms of things that we work on for years and years and years, it's probably pretty average.
Yeah, and there are some extra man hours involved when you're working on a really busy thoroughfare like this because you're having to rearrange or redirect traffic. Moving the cones around and that kind of stuff seems kind of minimal, but stuff like that adds up over the course of a long project like this. And as you mentioned, one of the big things is having to go through eminent domain to get these homes and having to shoulder that cost through this process as well. So yeah, it's to me, it's not groundbreaking. I think when it was almost $7 million, that is a lot of money. So that would still attract people's attention and because it's this intersection, but that's not why this got so much press coverage. It's because of the way things went. It's because of the way it was handled. And that's what a lot of people were screaming about and not happy about. So I kind of teased it out earlier, well before we should have, that in 2008 and 2010, there were some what we call interested parties meetings. So Scott, what's an interesting party meeting? There's some argument about that, basically.
Yeah, no, there is. An interested party meeting is that when the city wants to make improvements that affect people's homes, namely eminent domain, construction that changes traffic, that kind of thing, they need to meet with the people who that would affect. So generally, that means that the kind of institutions that run the neighborhood, the neighborhood societies, what are those?
Neighborhood organizations.
Clubs.
I don't know. It depends. I'm not sure what Grasslands calls theirs.
I don't know what they have.
I think so association usually is the word.
Yeah, association is the word they use. So they met with the neighborhood association. They get buy-in from that. They meet with other people in the neighborhood, get buy-in from them, and they meet with politicians and get buy-in from them. All those people are considered interested parties. So it is on the responsibility of the government to contact those people, send them phone calls, letters, whatever. Just putting an ad out in the paper isn't enough, though I think that's also required. But yeah, they did that in 2008 and 2010. And we know this because the Historic Preservation Commission, when they heard about this in 2012, they said, where were we in 2010? Where were we in 2008? And They weren't there.
Yeah. So there were some interested parties, people that were definitely interested in this or would have been interested in it that did know about it, weren't there. And that's one of the obvious ones as well. But the other thing is that even the people that were at those meetings were saying, well, we didn't talk about this. We talked about projects here, but we didn't talk about tearing homes down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The HPC is what I'm going to call them, the Historic Preservation Commission. In their report, they actually went through public records law to prove that they weren't there and to make this complaint. And they showed that there were summaries of the ideas they talked about. And they, for some reason, were talking about a lot of stuff kind of north of Providence Road, Turner Road, improvements there. Turner and Rollins seemed to be the main concern. The stuff down south, closer to Stadium and in Grasslands itself, as far as we could tell in those documents, was really never discussed. So
yeah, which when you're talking about Turner, we're talking about the campus area now, right? And so that's probably why Grasslands people that ended up being affected by this weren't quite as worried about it because it wasn't on their turf at this point. It was in the other guy's turf.
Yeah, exactly. The other weird thing that was going on there was in 2008, there's evidence that the 5th Ward council person had heard about some meetings and said, hey, I feel a little weird that you guys are talking about major construction in my neighborhood and I wasn't there at that meeting. I'm not quite sure how she found out about it, but it came to her attention and she was annoyed. So she sent an email out to the city manager The city manager said, listen, you just want to stay out of it at this point. There's a lot of people pissed off at each other. It's a really contentious thing. We're going to talk to them one-on-one, and then you come to the table later.
Right. And so, obviously, at this point, that leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths because they still feel like they weren't talked to. We weren't involved in the conversation. They're in 2012 saying, wait, what the heck? And saying, you know, I should have been involved in this from the beginning.
Yeah, it starts to – I mean, this is what people are really talking about when they're talking about backdoor deals, right? Deals that are made one-on-one, not in the public sphere, not with politicians present.
Right. And so, well, yeah, and that's something that
– that is elected officials.
In this community, people are very concerned about and very aware of the Sunshine Law, and people make – regular residents, we talked about FOIA requests and sunshine requests. Regular residents make those in Columbia, which is really unusual, but they do that. They want to see what city council people are emailing to each other, and they want to see how things happen because they're very engaged. At least a good amount of people in town, more than you would think in a town this size, are really interested in how that stuff happens. So this kind of stuff drives people insane. Even if you have no stake, even if you don't live at Grasslands and you don't really necessarily care about this area that much, maybe you don't even like campus in this area, you still are interested in the way the city council and the city government is working. And so that's why we've got a lot of people upset about this.
Right. So the city, what they say is that some point in there, 2008, 2010, we did talk about this idea. It doesn't really seem to be the case, to be honest.
I haven't seen any document that shows. I mean, I guess it's tough to, unless you go back and listen to a recording of which I don't know if that even exists. You don't know if you can't prove either way, I guess, whether or not it was talked
about. Yeah, so, but they said, just to make everybody happy, we're going to hold an interested party meeting anyway. We don't have to, but we're just going to do it anyway. And that's the meeting when they brought out all the 10 options and rebranded phase one as option 9. That was an interested parties meeting.
And that was the one in March of this year. But even then, the assistant city attorney said, well, this isn't legally required. Because there was a lot of people that were saying this was illegal. This is not how things should have gone. And there's some debate going on there whether or not this is even something, how formal this has to be and what exactly is required in these process. Because there is a public hearing, like there are for anything at the city council meeting before this is passed. That process also went very quickly on this project as well. And people weren't so thrilled. So it was just one of these things that a lot of people all of a sudden found this thing happening in town that they weren't aware of and wish they had been a part of before. So,
So what do you think, Ryan? Do you think this was a backdoor deal?
I
know you don't like to decide on these things. Like
I know,
some kind of judge
you put me on the spot.
But.
I mean, I think there were definitely, as we've been talking about, there were definitely some conversations that went back and forth. The way things were handled leaves a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. It isn't exactly how you want your city government to be running. Now, that said, I think there's some gray area there, whether there was actually some process that wasn't followed correctly. I don't know that this isn't that unique of a circumstance, really. The eminent domain thing doesn't come up that often in Columbia, but it does come up a lot in other communities as well. The thing that makes it really
specifically for roads, that's a very common use.
Yeah. It's not all that uncommon for this to come up in the world, but we're talking about a really central point of town, so I think that's also part of why people care a whole lot about this. This isn't some neighborhood that you've never driven through. This is the thing you drive by once or twice a week at least.
Mm-hmm. The Historical Preservation Commission guy, the vice president there, he made a comment on KUMU actually that said that this is really the facade of Columbia for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because if you're coming from out of town to go see a football game, then this is going to be the neighborhood that you really see first coming into town and that you associate most strongly with Columbia.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, this literally is one of the homes that I'm sitting there is the one that little like fantasy thing me and my wife had about living in one of these homes and the whole
thing. Yeah, standing there in your smoking jacket.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm doing. it was actually one of these homes was one of them that I always picture in my mind. Like if that was going to happen, that home is really cool. I could live there.
Yeah. That Tudor Revival house with the pointy.
It's exactly
homes,
what it is. Yeah. It's the cooler one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I even looked up as part of this prep. I'm like, I wonder how much that thing costs. And actually, it went into foreclosure in 2010, but it still went for $270,000. So we're not talking about cheap homes here.
No.
I mean, they're old, but they're pretty well taken care of because it is the facade of town. It's a really important part of the town for sure. Again, the heavily trafficked introduction. One of these melting points between the city and the campus. That's something that's very attractive to a lot of people about Columbia.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So I don't know. What do you think, Scott? Do you think this was a backdoor deal? Does this feel shady to you?
You know, my feeling is that it's really more like it kind of feels like bad governance than it does feel like a backdoor deal. Because, you know, in some ways, this is the way that you have to get things done. You know, it's not a bad idea to actually talk to people on a one-on-one basis that you know are going to be contentious. You're going to say, hey, I'm going to bring up this idea publicly. I want to talk to you first so that you don't get mad when I do it. That's actually a nice thing to do, right? To try to smooth out the troubles before it gets public.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing to do. But the thing is, when you spend all your time smoothing out troubles and you don't get everything in public eventually, then it kind of looks like it's a backdoor deal.
Right. And yeah, I mean, it helps the process go more smoothly as well, right? Because then you're not – think of like – again, I'm going to reference Parks and Recreation as much as I can. But think about like their public meetings they have every now and then, and people just stand up with all their complaints or every problem they have with anything. And you're trying to avoid that situation where you fight these battles. I mean, you should fight some battles. It's kind of a fine line. You need to fight battles out in public as well, but you want to address some of the obvious things first so that you have a good plan before you start wasting everybody's time.
Yeah.
I think about
like the way that you try to comport yourself in the workplace too, that like if you have a problem with somebody, a public meeting is not the place to do it, you know? And maybe it eventually has to get there, but you should talk to them one-on-one first.
Right. Scott, you need to clean out the refrigerator. It's
yeah,
disgusting.
Exactly.
Okay, next person in the meeting. Like, yeah, I'm not going to do that in front of 20 people. You're right. So, yeah, it's kind of a fine line, and that's where I'm at too. But I definitely understand why people are upset, and that's why it got so much attention, I think, because there were a lot of people really making some noise about this, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, in the end, I think everybody agrees, even the people involved, this was poorly done. It could have been done better. We're not sure if we got to the best solution or not. And I don't know if we would have gotten to a better solution if we had done it right either. It's just a damn hard problem to fix.
Yeah, it's the physical constraints of the area. You know, we talked about it this whole time. And again, look at a map or just pay attention the next time you drive through and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. There's not an easy solution to this problem other than making some major changes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now you know everything about this stretch of Providence Road. There's not a damn thing more you can figure out about this little piece of road.
Like, no, that's about as far. It's about as far as we can go.
I think we explained it. I'm going to end the show.
All right.
That's going to do it for Como Explained. I am Scott Pham. My co-host is Ryan Muehlener. Today, you also want to thank Casey Morrell, who helped us do some research.
Oh, thanks, Casey.
This time around.
You made us sound really smart.
Yeah. You helped us out a great deal, Casey, so thank you. If you're streaming this online right now, stop doing that. Download it onto your computer, your device. Take it with you. It's a lot easier. Find us on the iTunes Store and subscribe to the podcast. Search for Como Explained. Super, super easy. If you really like us, leave a comment. It means a great deal. It helps other people find the podcast too. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.